development. She'd moved her efforts a couple of hundred miles west to what would be a massive extraction. ConocoPhillips' Willow Project near the village of Nooksot and in the National Petroleum Reserve. This time, Murkowski appears to have Team Biden in her corner, even though the development plan has all the usual horrors. A Texas-based corporation turning northern Alaska into another industrial sacrifice zone, jeopardizing indigenous food security, particularly by threatening the Teshepak Caribou herd, surrounding the people of Nooksot with light, noise, and chemical pollution, and of course, locking in decades of fossil fuel extraction when scientists tell us we must be doing precisely the opposite. Willow is the biggest oil and gas project pending on U.S. public lands, and that's using the Biden administration's estimate of what it would produce, about 600 million barrels of crude oil. Privately, according to the Washington Post, ConocoPhillips is telling investors that its new Arctic hub could eventually unlock five times as much, 3 billion barrels. Though ConocoPhillips may use this year's high gas prices or the energy disruptions caused by the crisis in Eastern Europe push the project, those are just industry talking points. By the time the project comes online, modelers are predicting 33% of the vehicle sales will be electric. And the current round of climate crises will only be growing. Already more of Alaska has burned so far this year than at this point in the time in the last 80 years. Local officials, including native communities, are split. Oil always means money, even if a lot of it goes out of state. But scientists are not split. The International Energy Agency said last year that if we had any hope of meeting the targets the world set in Paris in 2015, there could be no further expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure. On his very first day in office, Biden rejoined those accords. In Glasgow last year for the follow-up UN conference, he talked about overwhelming obligations to the poorer countries decimated by climate change. But that's ink on paper and words through microphone. There is nothing abstract about the hundreds of millions of barrels of oil that the Willow Project would produce, nor the guaranteed rise in the temperature. You know, who can see that future coming? ConocoPhillips. To sustain hundreds of miles of new ice roads and pipelines proposed for the project, this company may have to artificially chill the melting tundra. Read that again. They could artificially freeze the melting soil in order to extract more petroleum, which, when it burns, will raise the temperature even higher. If you want a snapshot for the insanity that is, the Biden administration's environmental impact statement says that it prefers development, but it does include another option: no action. If we want to adopt that plan, if we want, that is, to leave the carbon in the ground where it can do no damage, we have to let the administration know. The U.S. Interior Department is taking comments on its Willow Project environmental impact statement for 45 days. Here's what to tell officials. Donald Trump wanted to drill Alaska until science and common sense put a crimp in his plans. Why, on a heating earth, would Americans want to start it up again?
we say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches!
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
Long Beach, California's homeless population grew by 62% since 2020. Hundreds of homeless people have died due to extreme heat. Rents are soaring all over America, especially in big metropolitan cities. Evictions are rising sharply with the end of the pandemic eviction moratorium. Now, just in New York, there are roughly 2,000 eviction cases filed by landlords each and every week. Even with less demand, prices of homes are still on the rise. In fact, house prices have marked the 123rd consecutive month of year-over-year increases. Rising mortgage rates are also turning people's dreams of owning a home into an absolute nightmare.
Under the bridge.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to We the People. I am your host, Daniel Arya. In today's episode, we'll discuss the housing crisis in America. Why is the cost of rent rising so rapidly, and what is behind the massive evictions? What is the status of homelessness, and what is being done to help the homeless? As usual, we're pleased to have our two guests on our show, Dust James, host of Anti-Imperialist America, and Dean Henderson, author and political analyst from South Dakota. Stay tuned.
The U.S. housing crisis has been going on for some time. The pandemic, unemployment, rising inflation, gas price hikes, and mortgage rate growth has only added to this crisis. Rental costs have gone up all over the country. The average rent in Manhattan has reached $4,000 in May, which is the highest price ever reported. This number is more than a 25% increase since the previous year. Many left New York at the start of the pandemic, causing the rent prices to drop. Now, with COVID-19 worries dying down, some are returning to face extraordinary high rental costs.
Everything was so much more expensive than what they had before.
How much more expensive?
Right now I'm paying a grand more.
A grand more?
A grand more.
That's a big difference.
Yeah, it's a huge difference, and it's like it changed my life.
Now, the rent problem is not just isolated to New York. In fact, it's worse in some other cities and states. Miami was the country's most overvalued rental market for May for a third consecutive month. Renters in Miami are paying 22.7% higher than expected based on historical trends in individual markets. Now, traditionally, rent costs rise by about 2 to 3% a year, but this year the U.S. average rent cost rise was about 15.87%, and some places like Miami saw an increase of more than 31%. So what are the problems with housing today in America?
That's a hard question to start on. I think the most dire problem in the United States is homelessness is rapidly expanding. There's super high inflation within the housing market. Rents are higher. It's harder to get a home. Credit is becoming harder to get a home, and the homes that are available have gone dramatically up in price in recent years. And these problems are a result of our banking system. We have a laissez-faire, you know, a few monopoly banks own the entire economy, and there's little or no regulation on it.
So with rental costs skyrocketing, if you think buying a home would be a better option today, you need to think again. Even though the housing market is slowing down, buying a home has not become any more affordable. Now, while purchase demand has dropped, prices are still rising. According to CoreLogic, home prices reached an all-time high in April. Now, during that month, they grew by almost 21% from 2021. So what are some of the reasons behind the housing crisis?
Maybe you could just say it's an end result of monopoly capitalism. You know, if you allow these cartels to form, if you don't break them up at some point, which, I mean, we have laws on the books to do that, Sherman Antitrust Act, Clayton Antitrust Act, you know, these companies could be broke up. You know, we could also be talking about rent controls, you know, to help people out. So now, yeah, the Fed is behind the curve and raising rates really fast. And but right now, you still don't see any relief in the housing sector. So, yeah, increasingly, families are just having to spend all their money on rent and or a mortgage payment. And then they've got maybe something left for gas and food, and that's about it. So, and of course, the sanctions that the U.S. put on Russia don't help, because, you know, it's not, you know, Biden says it's Putin's war that's causing inflation, but it's not. It's the sanctions that the Biden administration, along with the EU, put on Russia that are causing another leg up in inflation.
The price rise in April was the 123rd consecutive month of year-over-year increases. Researchers believe that the price gains are related to the growth of mortgage rates, which has caused buyer urgency. Shortage of homes for sale and buyers urgently wanting to buy before another possible rise of mortgage rates are said to be the main reasons behind the higher prices. According to the National Association of Realtors, housing affordability has dropped by 29%, which is the worst annual decline on record.
That's because it's getting harder and harder to get a home. Well, first of all, the wages are stagnant. Inflation is reaching double-digit numbers. There's less and less jobs available. The mortgage companies are making it less likely for, you know, young folks getting houses as well as people in general to get houses. I mean, let's compare this to China, where they have a nationalized banking system, where the government controls the banks and lends money to things that benefit society. You have a 90% home ownership rate. In the United States, the banks can do whatever they want to get a profit. So they invest in things like prisons and military and wars and destruction.
In many cities, the eviction moratorium due to COVID-19 has expired or will expire soon, and thousands are facing eviction. Some renters have applied for rental assistance from the state, but many have been denied or have not been approved in time for the eviction suspension expiration date.
And I pray, and I pray to God that they'll do something for this program, that they'll do something for our people, because this was supposed to help people, not have people like this.
In Detroit, even though there were pandemic eviction prevention measures put in place, thousands of renters were evicted during the past 2 years. A report by Stout, that's a global investment bank and advisory firm, found that evictions are pushing people out of Detroit. Now, the report analyzed 30,000 recent eviction filings and discovered that only 4% of Detroit tenants had actual legal representation, as opposed to 83% of landlords. So how are evictions affecting the poor and minority communities today?
Well, that's who gets hit the hardest, you know, every time there's an economic downturn or every time there's inflation, because those are the people that have the least expendable income already. So the people at the bottom of the economic rung are always the first to feel the pain. And I think now you're seeing it creep up into the middle class, but that middle class is shrinking. It has been shrinking for many years in America. And so now you've got a situation where, yeah, food banks, there's lines at food banks everywhere. And, you know, people are just coping the best they can. There's a lot of people living in their cars in this country. it would shock you how many people, you know, are just homeless, living in their cars, people crashing on couches of their friends because they just simply, you can't even afford to rent a place anymore. So it's definitely hitting the low-income people and minority people the hardest. And that's, you know, that's just always the way it is.
Nationwide eviction affects African-American communities and female-headed households disproportionately. Low-income communities would not be able to afford legal assistance, while landlords can, and this affects the outcome of the eviction courts dramatically. The Stout report states that a Detroit Right to Counsel program could prevent more than 6,000 evictions a year in the city, and that is just by providing legal assistance.
I think the homelessness population has increased drastically. People are moving in with family members. Young adults are staying at home. People are being forced to live in these more communal structures. Young adults are being forced to live through an extended period of adolescence, which is causing, you know, depression, drug abuse, suicide, and a host of other problems.
Now, the problems with rental costs and evictions are creating more homelessness in Fresno than drug abuse or mental illness. In a new book published called Homelessness is a Housing Problem, the author argues that what causes higher homelessness rates in some cities compared to others is not due to individual characteristics of the homeless, but the structural problems of the city that is related to its housing market.
You know, it's just like everything, it seems like in America nowadays, it's like instead of really dealing with the root cause, which, of course, is the inflation of the housing market and the rent market. So then instead of dealing with that, they come along and they'll build low-income housing, for example. But in this country, low-income housing goes through the Housing and Urban Development Department of Government. And what happens is basically developers and builders are the ones being subsidized to build these low-income so-called apartments. And even these so-called low-income apartments, I know around this area, it's just shocking how much they get for them. I mean, it's still really expensive for people.
The Long Beach's homeless population grew 62% over the past 2 years. The city's mayor has said that the pandemic has made the local and statewide homelessness crisis even more challenging. According to city data, nearly 44% of homeless people have said that they have become homeless because of financial trouble. A Long Beach homeless service provider cited the pandemic and high rents as the main causes of this spike in the number of homeless.
You're seeing a lot of repression. I was listening on the radio, and in some wealthier communities, they were giving bus tickets to other cities with where people had to sign up and say, oh, I ain't coming back again. I'm going to get this bus ticket, and I ain't coming back again. There's been forceful evictions of shanty towns and encampments. They've been trying to hide the homeless problem rather than build people's houses. You have this anti-homeless architecture where they put spikes down in the concrete, and they put a bar in between the benches, and they basically push people into places like Skid Row. You see a massive a lot of the homeless, you know, in the center of the country.
Surging house costs and unemployment had left 600,000 people unhoused in 2020. This is while hundreds of homeless have died in extreme heat. Excessive heat is the cause of more weather-related deaths in the United States than catastrophes such as tornadoes, floods, and hurricanes combined. Of the 1,500 annual deaths due to heat in the country, half are believed to be homeless. So what is the government doing about the housing crisis?
Nothing, because we have two parties in this country, the Democrats and the Republicans. They're both beholden to corporate interests. There's no party of the working class anymore. The Democrats used to be that party. So if you were serious about helping people out, you would put rent controls in. You would put price controls on food, price controls on gas. You would break up the meatpacking cartel. You break up the oil cartel. You would make it a state oil company, just seize the assets of these companies. And you know, you would do things like that. That's what a real left party would do. But there's no left party in America anymore. Again, they've been both bought off by the corporate PAC money. And every election cycle, we see the person that gets the most money from the corporations wins. It's just that simple. So it's really hard for a working class person to even get into the political arena and win an office and do good for people, because if you're not beholden to the corporate interests, you just really don't have a chance of winning. So the entire political system in America is broken, and I really don't see any way out other than an external shock, which we're kind of seeing now with Russia in this situation, that will straighten it out. So yeah, it's they're not doing anything, and they won't do anything until people demand that they do something.
Due to global warming, temperatures are on the rise nearly everywhere in the world. High temperatures coupled with drought in parts of America has created more frequent and intense heat waves. Now in Phoenix, Arizona, at least 130 homeless people were among 339 people who died as a cause of heat waves in 2021. Now experts believe that temperatures and drought will not improve this year either, and it may even get worse.
You know, I grew up working class poor, and a large portion of that was in trailer parks. And the way that goes is you buy an old trailer or new trailer, and once you own that, you have to pay the lot rents. And this situation is a lot cheaper than renting a house outright. But in recent years, a lot of the trailer parks were bought up by these huge international companies. And they recognize that the housing market is unregulated. Other parts of the economy are less stable to invest in. So they're buying up all these trailer parks, raising the rents, and essentially forcing out people and then making improvements and raising the rents up further. So one of the aspects of affordable housing, which was trailer parks, is also becoming further and further profitized by these banking institutions.
For the first time in Oregon, officials opened 24-hour cooling centers. Volunteers offer popsicles to the homeless, and they can enjoy the cool breeze of fans at the center. Advocates in Phoenix hope that a recently converted vacant building to a 200-bed shelter for the homeless would help save lives in the extreme heat this summer. Some teams in Las Vegas were also delivering bottled water to the homeless that are living in encampments around the country. In San Francisco and elsewhere, gentrification is blamed for adding homelessness and hiking up property prices. In this city, for every 100,000 residents, there are 512 unsheltered homeless people, which is far more than in New York, Boston, Washington, or Chicago. It's interesting to note that, according to Census Bureau, in the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic, San Francisco lost more than 6% of its population.
Yeah, it's really affecting it a lot, especially certain parts of the country. I used to live in Montana probably 15 years ago. I left Montana because the Californians were moving in, and in California, you know, you can sell your house for $500,000 if it's a shack, and you can go to Montana and buy a mansion. Well, not anymore. Now that's moving east. I'm sorry. Now I live in Western South Dakota in the Black Hills. And now you're seeing the same people that moved into Montana. They're pushing this way further. Housing here, you can't buy a house where I'm at for under $300,000, something like that.
Now, the housing crisis in the U.S. has been exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, rise in unemployment, and high inflation. Rent costs are skyrocketing. The poor, and especially many in the minority communities, simply cannot afford a place to live. Evictions have been boosting, and more families are finding themselves out on the streets. The state and federal authorities are doing very little, and the homeless can only find some temporary relief in the activities of some volunteer and charity organizations. And now let's see what Abbas Montaghim has prepared for us this week.
Peace, and welcome back to Power to the People. On today's episode, we will talk about the capitalist-created housing problem in the so-called United States of America. And I say created because the housing problem is literally a manufactured crisis by these capitalist overlords. But before we get into all that, we first and foremost, we must understand that housing itself must be considered a human right. Literally all the materials that are used to build houses that come from the earth. And God gave humanity these resources. But what these corrupt American capitalists have done has made housing into a commodity in which the white settler colonizers and corporations get wealthy over controlling the industry and deciding what human being is deserving of housing. And this all happens literally on stolen land. But this is just the American capitalist way. While America is known to be one of the most advanced countries in the world, they can't even house their own citizens. And in America, there's literally over 500,000 people that are homeless and living on the streets. And this must be understood as something that is an intentional part of American capitalism. Because get this, there are literally over 16 million homes that are vacant in America. So rather than the government actually subsidizing housing for the homeless to be housed, they would rather keep people living on the streets and living in squalor. This exposes the parasitic, blood-sucking nature of American capitalism. It purposely manufactures a housing crisis, and it fools the general public into thinking that we actually need more housing, when the opposite is actually true, as clearly there's plenty of vacant housing. When this scarcity propaganda is used, what it does, it literally allows cities and these corporations to work together and to develop areas and build new housing. It allows existing landlords to drive up the prices in housing, and then these corporations and landlords, they rake in huge profits. And Uncle Sam, he gets paid off for all that through all these taxes. So we must understand that this homelessness issue is not a problem of housing. It's an issue of capitalism, which creates and requires homelessness in order for these capitalists to continue to rake in huge profits. And the issue of housing and homelessness is only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse, especially with how the economy currently is due to the NATO-backed war in Ukraine against Russia. And with this war, these capitalists, they have decided to raise the gas price in the USA so that these multinational American gas companies can rake in huge profits. And in some states, gas is literally as high as $7 a gallon. And mind you, the minimum wage in California is literally $15. So a lot of someone's paycheck is potentially going to gas. And with capitalist credit inflation, the value of the dollar is also decreasing while cost of rent is increasing. This literally shows how capitalism operates and forces people into homelessness. These capitalists, they literally have blood on their hands and are killing people through their inhumane control over land and resources. Literally, the life expectancy of someone who is experiencing homelessness is literally 50 years old. And Black and African people make up almost 40% of the homeless population, despite being just 12% of the American, so-called American population. And every year, 13,000 homeless people die simply due to the conditions of being on the street. Well, there's literally millions upon millions of vacant houses. This clearly shows how capitalism itself, American capitalism, is genocidal and it must be stopped. This is Power to the People.
And that was our show, everyone. Thank you. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. And do join us again next week for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Last week, we completed explanation of Surah Waqi'ah, and from this Friday onwards, we embark on explanation of the next surah, that is Surah Hadid, which is number 57 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It has 29 ayahs and was revealed in Medina. It mentions the heavy metallic element called iron as being sent down by God to endow the earth itself with mighty force and provide humanity with the many benefits of its structural strength, as well as all the great tests of faith that arise from this. It takes its name from Ayah 25, which mentions Hadid, that is iron. The opening ayahs present several divine attributes. Then the surah proceeds with the grandeur of the Noble Quran, the state of believers and hypocrites on the day of resurrection, accounts of the past nations and spending in the way of Allah for establishment of social justice. It criticizes monasticism and social seclusion and mentions the response received from the public by the previous prophets, such as Noah, Abraham, and Jesus, peace upon them. The surah closes with a reference to the people of the book. Interesting merits are mentioned concerning the recitation of Surah Hadid, such as the prophet saying that the reciter of this surah will be counted from among the staunch believers. It should, however, be noted that recitation must be accompanied by proper reflection on its contents and putting them into practice. First, we invite you to listen to ayahs 1, 2, and 3 of Surah Hadid.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Sabbaha lillahi ma fis samawati wal ardi wa huwal azizul hakim. له ملك السماوات والأرض يحيي ويميت وهو على كل شيء قدير هو الأول والآخر والظاهر والباطن وهو بكل شيء عليم.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, whatever there is in the heavens and the earth glorifies Allah, and He is the Almighty, the All-Wise. To Him belongs the kingdom of the heavens and the earth. He gives life and brings death, and He has power over all things. He is the first and the last, the manifest and the hidden, and He has knowledge of all things. The Arabic phrase of the opening ayah, Sabbaha lillah, means glory to God Almighty, is in past verbal form according to grammatical rules and goes on to say that everything in the heavens and the earth glorifies Allah. This particular phrase also marks the opening surahs Hashr and Saf, which are numbered 59 and 61 respectively. Two other surahs, that is Jum'ah and Taghabun, which are numbered 62 and 64, start with the phrase Yusabbih lillah, which is in present verbal form and conveys the same meaning. Glorification of God by each and everything means that even the tiniest atom has some sense of perception, which is beyond the little knowledge we humans have managed to acquire through trial and error. In other words, the wonderful world of creation, which functions in an orderly manner, without any haphazard occurrences, is based on divine wisdom and indicates the infinite power of God, who is glorified and praised by each created thing, even the seemingly inanimate objects. Sovereignty of the realms of the earth and the heavens belongs to the one and only Creator, who grants life and decrees death, and everything is in His possession. Ayah 3 indicates delicate expressions regarding the divine attributes of the first and the last, and the manifest and the hidden, which reflect God's pre-eternality and everlastingness. In other words, He is the necessary being who has neither origin nor end, but He is pre-eternal and everlasting. From these ayahs we learn that, number one, each and every creature, including the tiniest atom, has some sense of perception of the Almighty Creator and glorifies Him. Number two, God is the real sovereign of the entire universe, which means all other ownerships are transitory and unreal and should not make us proud. And number three, both life and death are decreed by God, the pre-eternal and the everlasting. Now let us listen to ayahs 4, 5, and 6 of the same surah.
هُوَ الَّذِي خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ فِي سِتَّةِ أَيَّامٍ ثُمَّ اسْتَوَى عَلَى الْعَرْشِ يَعْلَمُ مَا يَلِجُ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَمَا يَخْرُجُ مِنْهَا وَمَا يَنْزِلُ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ وَمَا يَعْرُجُ فِيهَا وَهُوَ مَعَكُمْ أَيْنَمَا كُنْتُمْ والله بما تعملون بصير له ملك السماوات والأرض وإلى الله ترجع الأمور يولج الليل في النهار ويولج النهار في الليل وهو عليم بذات الصدور.
It is He who created the heavens and the earth in six stages, then settled on the throne. He knows whatever enters the earth and whatever emerges from it, and whatever descends from the sky and whatever ascends to it. And He is with you wherever you may be. And Allah sees best what you do. To Him belongs the kingdom of the heavens and the earth. And to Allah all matters are returned. He makes the night pass into the day and makes the day pass into the night. And He knows best what is in the breast. According to the Noble Quran, the wonderful universe has been created in six stages, which means periods of time that are unknown to us, since the counting of our years is limited to the planet Earth's revolving around the sun, similar to other planets of the solar system whose years, whether shorter or longer, depends on their own particular orbits. Thus, the six stages or periods of creation mentioned in Ayah 4 are not based on the years of our planet. Allah the Almighty is far glorious to have any form, shape, or place. Hence, the phrase settled on the throne refers to His absolute sovereignty and His all-encompassing power over the entire universe. As the Creator, He is aware of each and everything in the entire universe, including the number of the minutest insects, the orbits of the billions of stars, the raindrops that fall on the earth, the vapors that ascend towards the atmosphere, and all animate or inanimate objects, as well as thoughts that flash across our minds. He is nearest to every one of us than our own jugular veins, and yet unseen, since eyes cannot perceive Him, although we feel His love and compassion in our hearts. His sovereignty covers the heavens and the earth, including whatever they possess, since it is He who is the all-wise Creator, to whom everything returns. It is the infinite power of Allah that makes the earth rotate on its axis while revolving around the sun, thus ensuring adequate hours of daylight and darkness that vary as per the seasons and evolve into months and years, while providing the exact amount of light and darkness necessary for human life as well as growth of plants. Nothing is hidden from the Creator, who is fully aware of whatever one harbors in his or her hearts and chests. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, creation and its duration are based on divine wisdom. Number two, God is aware of all and everything in the universe world. Number three, sovereignty belongs to God alone. And number four, the days and nights are clear examples of God's orderly administration. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here are ayahs 7, 8, and 9 of Surah Hadid.
آمنوا بالله ورسوله وأنفقوا مما جعلكم مستخلفين فيه فالذين آمنوا منكم وأنفقوا لهم أجر كبير وما لكم لا تؤمنون بالله والرسول يدعوكم لتؤمنوا بربكم وقد أخذ ميثاقكم إن كنتم مؤمنين هو الذي ينزل على عبده آيات بينات ليخرجكم من الظلمات إلى النور وإن الله بكم لرؤوف رحيم.
Have faith in Allah and His Prophet, and spend out of that wherein He has made you successors of the past generations. Those of you who have faith and spend in Allah's way, there is a great reward for them. Why should you not have faith in Allah while the Prophet invites you to have faith in your Lord, and He has certainly made a covenant with you, should you be faithful? It is He who sends down manifest signs to His servants that He may bring you out of darkness into light, and indeed Allah is most kind and merciful to you. Faith in God and obedience to His commandments, as elaborated by the Prophet, is not mere lip service, but should be embedded in the heart in order to become manifest through actions, such as spending in God's way, including from what one has inherited from the predecessors. There are untold rewards for those who spend in the way of Allah, since whatever we possess are merely trust that should not be squandered, and whatever is left should be passed to posterity. It is worthy of note that belief is valuable when it is accompanied by helping the needy, and such expending is valuable when it arises from belief in God Almighty and obedience to the teachings of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Disbelievers are reproached for not having believed in the Prophet's call to have faith in Allah, despite being shown clear proofs, signs, and manifest miracles. Allah's covenant is for all believers. The Noble Quran, revealed to the Prophet of Islam as the last heavenly scripture, is the book of guidance that shows light to the seekers of truth, and those eager to come out of the darkness of ignorance will indeed find God as the most merciful. These ayahs teach us that, number one, mere expression of faith in God has no value without practical display of what the Prophet has taught, including helping the poor and the needy. Number two, prophets are God's emissaries for guiding people towards salvation. Number three, the Noble Quran saves people from ignorance, polytheism, and superstition. And number four, guidance through prophets and heavenly scripture, such as the Noble Quran, are among the best signs of God's mercy for mankind.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی است.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the text of the speech delivered on June the 28th, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of the top officials and employees of the judiciary. First of all, in those days, the imposed war had created the worst, most difficult situation. Inside the country in Tehran itself, there was a civil war going on. There was a civil war going on in the streets of Tehran. The Munafiqeen had come out into the streets with everything they could find, from razor blades that were used for cutting rugs to anything else they had at their disposal. They were threatening the lives of the people, the guards in the local committees, and the guards of the IRGC, etc. There was a war. Tehran was at war. This was the situation on June the 28th. The political situation in the country was such that about a week before June the 28th, the incompetence of the current president had been proven in parliament and he was removed from office. So the country did not have a president. This is how the situation was. In such a situation, the country lost a pillar like Shahid Beheshti.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Agha Beheshti was a pillar, truly a pillar. The value of such pillars that hold up the revolution cannot be calculated. Shahid Beheshti was one such pillar, but he left us in the middle of such a situation. About 2 months later, both the new president and prime minister, Shahid Rajai and Shahid Bahonar, were martyred together in the middle of a meeting. Many of you may remember these things, but our dear young people did not see these things at that time. They do not have a correct awareness of the history and details of these events. Think about this, you dear young people, our dear children. About 2 months after these events, Shahid Rajai and Shahid Bahonar, the president and prime minister at the time, were assassinated in a meeting and were gone. Shortly afterwards, a number of senior commanders from the army and the guard corps were martyred in a plane crash. Shahid Fallahi, Shahid Fakuri, Shahid Kuladuz, and the like. So in less than 3 months' time, all these bitter events took place. All these terrible tragedies occurred. All these devastating blows struck. Which country do you know of? Which government do you know of that can stand up to all these events and not collapse? You, the judiciary, are part of such a system.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
From the heart of beautiful Iran.
IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The European Commission is asking EU member states to reduce demand for gas by 15% until spring. For now, this is just a request, but the Commission warns it might well become a demand.
The 15% are aspirational. It's a voluntary goal. It's aspirational. And in case that we are in an emergency, then the target becomes binding.
The EU claims it's concerned that Russia will cut off all gas supplies in retaliation for sanctions imposed by the West over the war in Ukraine.
Shortfalls will not just affect the countries where the shortfalls happen. They will affect every single member state because they will have serious consequences on our economy. And nobody can escape that consequence.
The truth is, Russia has fulfilled all its energy supply contracts to the EU and vows to continue doing so. Some analysts believe the US and its transnational companies are behind the hysteria because they want to take business from Russia's Gazprom Energy Corporation.
The whole rhetoric today is based on imaginary threat, which was never confirmed by Russian authorities, because on contrary, Russian authorities said on many occasions, and including the President Putin, that Gazprom will honour their contracts.
Since Russia's so-called special military operation was launched in Ukraine last February, the EU has been importing large amounts of liquefied natural gas from the United States. It's an expensive process. The bloc is also signing contracts with countries in Africa and the Middle East.
During a technical briefing here for journalists, officials confirmed to me there has been no contact with Iran on increasing EU energy supplies, despite the Islamic Republic having enormous oil and gas reserves. In this regard, analysts say the EU continues to bow to US pressure, and it's ordinary citizens who are paying the price for that. Jerome Hughes at the European Commission, Brussels.
You don't have to be a financial expert to know your pound just isn't going as far. The price of everything has gone up. Living in the UK has become more expensive.
I've had to cut down on a lot of stuff. I can do shopping only maybe once, twice a month because finances are not that great. See, most money goes on bills, petrol, to get the kids to school, come back and, you know, make sure the house is in order because obviously the kids have to eat.
We've seen a dramatic increase in it whereby we could go and spend X amount and that would be for 7 days. We're now going, actually, that's not even covering the whole week now.
The things contributing to the high rate of inflation, soaring energy, fuel and food prices, driven by a number of factors.
Those causes are very often related to Ukraine and Putin and the war, because what we know is that has pushed up gas and electricity prices. They're also transport costs have been going up because of logistical problems following the coronavirus. Then, of course, we've got the problem of Brexit.
And the worst is yet to come. Britain's central bank has warned price rises could hit 11% later this year, but will come down in the year after. Experts say the UK could be at risk of recession.
The Bank of England's got it wrong, as usual. So it will come down, but it will be much more persistent than anybody is anticipating. And to get it back down to 2% could take at least 3 years, not two, not one. And it's going to take a long time, actually, because it's now embedded in the system. And people will want to catch up. You see, the public sector, they're going to take a big real wage cut this year, probably, but they're not going to...